Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome David McHugh to the broadcast. David is the Chief Information Officer of Computer Sciences Corporation. In that role, David directs the global IT staff, and his accomplishments include managing the litigation e-discovery support practice for CSC's general counsel, consolidating and replatforming email infrastructure, and overseeing the overall security posture of the company. Previously, he was CSC Healthcare's Chief Information Officer and Resource Officer, CSC's Corporate Vice President for Application Portfolio Management, and American Practice Management's Chief Information and Resource Officer. Also, David was a director at Anderson Consulting. David is a member of the SAP Professional Services Advisory Board and an adjunct professor at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. David has a bachelor's degree in organizational behavior and industrial relations from Rider University and an MBA from the Stern School of Business at NYU. I recently caught up with David in his office in Falls Church, Virginia, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as David spoke about his Bring Your Own Device program at CSC, Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed the methods he's used to govern such a diverse and geographically distributed organization, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as he talked about how he leverages subject matter experts throughout the business to IT's benefit, as well as a variety of other topics. David McHugh, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Peter, it's a pleasure.
Wonderful. Well, David, I wonder if you could take a moment and talk about your role at CSC.
So, I'm the Global CIO and Corporate Vice President of Computer Sciences Corporation, CSC. In that role, I have three hats. The first is everything we do for ourselves in terms of our IT environment, and I treat us as an account, just as I would any customer account. So I use an entire account model, things that we do with our own badged employees, things I do with my global outsourcer, CSC, as well as things that we do with third parties. The second hat is a go-to-market support hat. So I'm vice chair of the Tech America CXO Council. I meet with prospects and customers. I do reference calls, make presentations at various major conferences, speeches, etc. And then the third hat is I'm accountable for our global security posture in the company, all phases of it.
You've already spoken quite a bit about the complexity of the various roles that you have, given geography, given the various businesses you're in, given the different areas that you're responsible for. How do you manage all that? What's your approach to governance for all of that?
Well, we're active in approximately 90-plus countries with 98,000 employees worldwide. To handle that, I structure the office of the CIO using a three-legged approach. So I have embedded in each of the businesses a CIO or equivalent. I embed in the global functions a CIO. So a function could be HR, finance, supply chain, legal. And then finally, I have a CIO who is responsible for each of the major geographies, Asia, Australia, Europe, as an example, India. The combination of the three works very well. So when the individual who handles enterprise HR is looking at a new talent management or recruiting or position management type of approach, they work with the geography CIOs to ensure that the approach is legal, passes workers' council, meets the needs of a different nation-state regulation. And they work with the business CIOs to ensure that it works in terms of what they need to do for a industry vertical versus a horizontal, such as our SAP practice or a DBA type of environment. Likewise, when each of the ones in the other areas do their thing, they work as well in conjunction. So a geography CIO who needs something specific to that geography works with the appropriate enterprise CIOs to ensure that their approach doesn't sub-optimize globally.
That's excellent. As you very nicely point out, there are certain aspects of IT that need to be relevant for the geography or the topic that is of most relevance for where that IT need is identified.
As you think about standards across all this multiplicity of variables, how much can be standardized truly versus those things that need to reflect the various needs of an individual geography or business
Sure.
area?
So when people talk about standards in technology, they immediately jump to the technical solution and platform. Let's take it back one step. So if you do process on a global process, there is no reason you can't have a standardized global process to any activity. That process has to recognize that in particular jurisdictions or particular businesses, there are variations that have to be accommodated, but it's accommodated within the global template of the process, so it's optimized and balanced across the world for everybody's needs. Once you have that, then you look at the solutions. For core enterprise environments, finance, HR, you pick a platform. In our case, it happens to be SAP. We go to market and support every major ERP, finance system, etc. there is. But as I've said to the CFO, I'm not going to explain to the stockholders why we're going to run 15 different general ledgers just because we go to market with all of them. For the enterprise items, you pick an answer. There will never be a perfect answer. There will always be items that may be a little bit better in one space or another. We made a decision that our standard is a core enterprise environment, in this case, as I said, SAP. We will mate that with certain third-party ecosystem players that provide the appropriate plugins to optimize a particular area. Once we move out of the core items, then you look at the solution based upon what the requirements are. If it's something that is solely used by our banking or finance vertical, obviously, I can be more flexible there than something that's going to be used across five of our verticals. And that helps drive it, and you do that as a portfolio management approach. So you're always looking at each component as how it fits with everything else. In a technology firm, I have no lack of subject matter experts and no lack of involvement with new emerging technologies. What we have to, though, understand is that when you deal with a global enterprise solution, it has to be globally deployable, it has to be enterprise scalable, and it needs to be something that can actually be put in place in a fast, quick timeline. The days of having 3 and 5 year programs are long past.
Very interesting. So we've talked about how you think about standard processes and some things that might be more common across the organization. As ideas emerge from one part of the organization, what is the process if in fact it has a broader applicability? How do you take an emerging best practice from a microsite, so to speak, and draw that out more broadly across the organization? Do the same forums that bring together IT leaders identify some of those very things?
Yes, they do, and we have several mechanisms. So there are items I've developed for our own account that have been harvested to our go-to-market. For example, last spring, I put together an entire BYOD, bring your own device, a program and strategy using secure container technology for the smartphone and tablets. And we now support the iOS and Android platforms in addition to RIM throughout the world. That work was harvested through our mechanisms and became the core for one of our go-to-market services that we now offer our revenue customers. Contrary-wise, I've taken things from our go-to-market and brought them inside. You asked about mechanisms. So there are various forums that we do in our social networking in our own company. We use what we call C3. It's based upon Jive as a technology, but we've had social networking of that nature in our company now for 3+ years. So there's a tremendous amount of exchange that happens there. We also have a portfolio governance board that is a formal mechanism for incubation of new ideas that cut across multiple organizational lines. And then we have formal communities such as the individuals who act as CTOs for our customers, as well as our lead architects that exchange and interact.
Just thinking about all the different kinds of technologies that you employ across the world, is there a special need for enterprise architecture, the development of infrastructure roadmaps? Is there one record of the truth, so to speak, of all that you've employed?
Within the headquarters team of the Office of CIO, I have a vice president for applications portfolio management. I have a service delivery vice president, and I have a customer relations executive vice president. The three of them act as a triumphant to help coordinate across a variety of different areas that you're talking about and are supported by appropriate enterprise architects, program management offices, and related support mechanisms.
And how do you think about subject matter experts? I know that you've carefully employed some SMEs and obviously used them for important purposes. I wonder actually how you've leveraged SMEs across the entire organization to harvest some of what we're talking about.
One of the nice things about CSC is, since from a customer support point of view, if you're a tier one or halfway decent tier two vendor, whether it be in software, hardware, operating systems, whatever it is, some set of my customers probably are using you or have you as their standard. So I have no lack of being able to tap into CSC badge subject matter experts on almost any topic. That's a nice benefit of being here, and I take great advantage of it.
That's great. So wherever you're investigating a new technology for CSC's use, you have a great number of people likely who've tested that technology for other companies' uses, or for one reason or another have some kind of familiarity with it.
Correct. Or that I have several different customers who are interested in the same question and we can collaborate.
That's wonderful. In preparing for the interview, David, I noted that you have a non-traditional path to the CIO office. You don't, by training, have a traditional computer science or engineering background. Rather, you came through Anderson Consulting and found your way in some ways, I'm probably overstating that, but into technology and ultimately the leadership role in technology. I wonder if you can take a stroll down memory lane for us to talk a little bit about your path to ultimately this position.
Well, as you said, it's been non-traditional. So my undergraduate from Rider University is Management Organization Behavior, Industrial Relations, and Psychology. And I have a finance MBA out of Stern, New York University, Graduate School of Business. I've worked for the Wall Street Journal as an assistant on the editorial floor, which translates to run around and get whatever the research is that the reporters needed. But it was a lot of fun because I was doing that while doing my MBA, so the gentlemen who write the columns on page one were the individuals mentoring me as to what I needed to look for or ask in the courses I was going to. I've done OD consulting in the food industry. I've been active in consulting capacities in government, healthcare, manufacturing, owner-managed. So wide variety of areas. The path I took was one where I was always handling technology as part of the assignment. One of my early assignments at Anderson was to work with an IBM engineer with PC number 3 and figure out what it was and what the partnership needed to know about it. I've run traditional assignments in terms of programming shops and things of that nature. But you're right, I'm a businessman at heart, and I come at this from a business perspective. So I'm looking at what makes a difference. How do I do things that affect the bottom line? How do I harness and use technology to enable an outcome, not get in love with just the particular type of technology? Now, that doesn't get any of my teams off the hook. I can still gen a server and do code reviews and get down into the architecture with them very deeply. Anderson was a great experience. I worked up through the ranks there. And back in the mid to late 80s, your listeners may remember that Anderson Consulting was in the process of actually being formed, and it was the pre-Accenture days. We were in the process of separating from the audit division and creating two sister organizations. One day in the Northeast, we're kicking around some concepts with some of the managing directors and partners, and we suddenly realized that where we were going might be a little bit difficult for credibility when they learned we were still buying our word processing services from the audit division's Wang environment. That led me into the CIO path. I was asked to start putting together the appropriate approaches and infrastructures and take other steps to develop support mechanisms within the division I was part of. And from there, you know, the rest, they say, is history. After that, I went to American Practice Management to help get them ready for an M&A exit strategy, which involved a great deal of work around their operating environment and technology. CSC happened to win that particular event, and I was offered a position here, so I came in with them and proceeded to do some things here.
That's great. I think it's fascinating to hear about that path. I know that there's a stereotype, thankfully it's becoming less applicable, of IT leaders who wish to invest in IT for IT's sake. And I would imagine, given your background, that's never the case, but rather the business rationale, the needs addressed, the strategy facilitated or moved forward would be more of the operating standards in terms of why one might make an investment into technology. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. We're looking for the result and the enablement of success. And that may very well mean that something on an evaluation that rates 95 out of 100 might not be chosen over a second choice in the rating in 83, because the difference between 83 and 95 and what's causing that difference may not actually be material or relevant to the end purpose. And that's one of the things that I try and instill in all the technology individuals who come up there from that angle, how to think from a business perspective, from an end result perspective.
I want to stay with that topic for another moment, David. As there are so many IT leaders across the world at CSC, many of whom I imagine have the more traditional path, have a technology background in terms of education, grew up in IT departments, now find themselves as leaders, or perhaps a step away from that. Is there anything that you particularly counsel them, any gaps that you would suggest they fill? I imagine gaps are different, of course, individual by individual, but given your background and perhaps the differences between that and a more traditional IT background, is there anything that you counsel your IT leadership to stay focused on or to grow from a skills perspective in order to achieve their ultimate goals?
So there's a few things I look for and I suggest. One is, if you're going to go into the management part of this type of business, you need to have actually run some of the business. So people who have always done projects and then they move on to the next project after it's installed and goes live, I'd rather see those individuals have to run that environment for 6 months after it goes live. Because all of a sudden, you're not in the limelight. It's not the special project that gets all the consideration. You have to deal with the day-to-day activities of how to keep the operation running when you're hit with the flu and the virus takes out a third of your staff, or there is concern about, you know, who's going to get the next promotion to the open slot that five people are competing for. And when you work through those day-to-day types of environments, you suddenly have a different appreciation for what it takes to put a solution in place. The second item that I recommend to people is that they understand finance. They don't need to be able to read a balance sheet and a P&L statement perfectly, but if you don't understand such concepts as abandoning a piece of technology with a remaining book life means a period expense write-off, if you don't understand the difference between cash out the door versus simply moving things around on an accounting ledger, you will never be in the best position to make the strongest case for what you're advocating. The last item that I advise people is to understand how to link the strategy and the activity to a business end result. Now, that business end result could be profitability, EPS, margin. It could be increased revenues, growth of sales, but it could also be human capital. We forget very often that human capital, as opposed to servers and data storage, are not commodities that are as interchangeable as the hardware and software that we're so used to working with. And your human capital, at the end of the day, will make or break the success and longevity of an organization.
Very good points all around. Before we part, I wanted to ask you about trends that particularly excite you. You mentioned BYOD. That is certainly one that is front of minds of a lot of IT executives now. Are there other trends that particularly excite you as you look in your own crystal ball?
There's a few trends. So the first is mobility, obviously, and that goes beyond just BYOD. We're all beginning to appreciate what the convergence of the last few years of ubiquitous available bandwidth, thick pipes, and powerful handheld devices means. Whether it's the iPad, the Droid Razer Max, some of the work that's being done in the last couple of years, even by RIM, we've learned that being able to do anything, anytime, anywhere is the direction we're going. It's something that's actually arrived. Actually, I've been a proponent of that for a long time. You can go back to CIO Magazine in 1999 and find me on the cover sitting in Times Square with a laptop advocating mobility back then. But mobility is a big one. Analytics is the second one. Now, analytics is more than just big data. Yes, there are a whole bunch of different activities in big data, SAP with HANA, a variety of other technologies. But at the end of the day, it boils down to being able to see the data in large amounts and in near real time, ask a question without being a seasoned, experienced analyst, data analyst, and get usable answers back. And that's going to cut across a wide variety of heterogeneity, because it won't be just CRM data or sales data or finance data. It will be how you and I look at data across our lives to help direct the decisions we're going to make, whether as business professionals or consumers or home buyers. The other area that is a big one today is security. Now, everybody is seeing the articles about breaches, individuals and nation states, and they view this in terms of the concerns about the loss of identity. There's a much different and bigger aspect to the cybersecurity. You know, those of us who work security, whether it be physical, classified, or cyber, who may have understandings of incidents at a deeper level than the general press covers, understand that there is a tremendous effort going on throughout the world to secure intellectual property, both to take it away from the people who have it and therefore use it, as well as to keep it from being stolen. And what people don't always appreciate on intellectual property is it's a game changer. If I, as a company, have just spent $40, $50, $80 million to develop a new concept, and somebody steals that from me, and therefore can do equivalent to what I'm doing, without having spent $80 million, they can underprice me. If they can underprice me, they will control the market. That is the battle that we are all involved in today.
And as you mentioned at the outset, that security is one of the three planks of your responsibility, is a major one. How has your team evolved as the complexities of managing security have only increased? How have you thought about that from either a people or process or a technology perspective?
When you approach security, it is not just about the bits and bytes and electrons. If I wanted to get information out of a company, I might breach their firewalls to get there. I might also just send 50 or 80 8-gigabyte flash drives, USB sticks, as part of a marketing promotion, because somebody who gets it will probably stick it in and turn it on their computer, and that will let me in that way, bypassing all those firewalls. If I want to get information badly enough, you know, as a bad guy, you can bribe people to help you get in. So you have to look at security as not just cyber, but the entire spectrum. The same thing is true as a listener at home. Nobody who's listening to your show right now would take their income tax form and simply throw it out in the garbage. They would do something to it. They'd cut it, they shred it, do something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And yet, think about how many things you do every day that gives away information about yourself in a way that somebody who is paying attention could take advantage of it to steal from you. We only need to go on some of the social networking sites to see the impact of that. You know, I'm an adjunct professor at the University of Maryland's Smith School of Business. One of the things I teach in my class is think about what it is you're tweeting and posting. Have as much fun and be as social and professional as you want. But also consider the fact that when you post the fact that you are going away on vacation for the next week, you have also just given somebody a menu of places that they can go check out to see if it's worth stopping by while you're on vacation.
Very good point. And to think of it only as a technology issue is seeing a very small part of the equation here.
Yes.
No, very good point indeed. Well, David McHugh, thank you so much for taking this time on the Forum on World Class IT and providing us your many great thoughts. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you very much for having me. Best to you and your listeners.
You've You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Kuhl, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.